Grant Napier and Doug Christie, all guests come to you via the Fire Wings Hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. Coming to you from Dallas, Kings and Mavs tomorrow. Iron Eagle to talk some NCAA basketball in about 30 minutes. So Iron been very busy, and he has got the games coming up this weekend as well. So we'll check in with him. He's got the Midwest, North Carolina and Auburn, and Kentucky and Houston. So we'll chat with him in about 30 minutes. But right now we get to Tom. Tom, welcome to the program. Hey, Tom.
And you're a great part of my day.
Thank you. Appreciate you listening.
Hey, I got a question I've never heard anybody talk about. It used to be you had a head coach, an assistant coach, then you had a strength conditioning coach. What's with the – I understand they've got a lot of invested in players, want to get a lot out of them. Maybe coaches are cheap, but King's got like nine guys there. What do they all do? Who are they? What do they do?
Well, you got developmental coaches. You got assistant coaches. Mostly the head assistants. You got one guy that will be in charge of defense. Then when you look behind the bench, you got Larry Lewis. You got Bobby Jackson. You got Phil Ritchie. Those guys are helping in the development of the players before the game. If you ever come to the game and come to Golden One Center a little bit early, you'll see the players come out. They have certain times. All the coaches, and this is every single coach, works with the exception of Dave Yeager on game day, works with certain players on different aspects of their games, goes with shooting and ball handling and different things like that. So all of them have a piece in what you see is going on and trying to develop the players and bring them to higher levels.
Well, that sort of makes sense. Maybe it's like football where you've got a running backs coach and a receivers coach.
Similar, but actually, I particularly like that model, to be honest with you. I think that development in football is a little bit more specific than basketball at times. But this in basketball is an area that we're seeing continue to grow, to be honest with you, because you talk about skill developments, trying to develop players' talents and find a way to unlock all the possibilities within them. So, yes, similar to what you're saying.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. Grant Napier and Doug Christie, when I started doing the games in 1988, there was one head coach, one assistant coach, one trainer, one equipment manager, and we flew commercial, and we all helped out one another. As a broadcaster, I used to help out in shoot-arounds.
Yep.
At times, I would officiate practice. I would, you know, help in all aspects of traveling with the team. I mean, we all chipped in. We all helped one another. We all were there for one another. It's, have times changed.
They have, Grant. I mean, you think about nutrition. You can talk about the fact that on some of the flights, some of the buses, different things, there you burgers and all types of different stuff. Not that there's not some of that.
Sure.
But it's more about making sure that the players are eating the right things. You take into consideration some teams have a sports psychologist that travels with the team that deals with the players. You got therapist that will massage therapist. There so many different aspects are covered nowadays.
I mean, you've seen what other teams are doing this. You know, what is it called? The push plate that the players jump on after before games, outside a locker room to measure all kinds of things.
Right. Well, it measures your explosion and different things. A lot of it from when I talk to some of these guys around the Kings, what I find interesting is a lot of that is the ability to try to identify and bookmark little things that might be a telltale about getting injured.
If you land wrong, if you're jumping and on your, and I think this is what they worked on with Harry Giles last year.
Yep, come on. Well, so if for instance, Harry hurt both knees, but the point is, if you're leaning a little bit more towards one than the other, and now they're gonna, why is that? What is going on?
Are
with
you
the
jumping
body?
Bow-legged? Are you landing bow-legged? Little things like that that can put immense stress on your joints and ligaments.
Not to mention when you land, are you landing more on the balls of your feet, on midfoot, on your heels? All these things play into that. Speaking of which, remember last year we had Frank Mason who landed on both of his heels and bruised his heels.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that was kind of, you know.
But it makes a difference.
Yes, it does, definitely.
All right, let's get to Rono You're on Sports 1140. How are you? All right, he's no longer there. You know, to go one step further, they actually, last year, worked on Harry, and correct me if I'm wrong here, on jumping differently because of the way his legs were. In other words, they basically taught him a different way to jump and land.
I was going to use the word jumping properly.
Thank you.
And a lot of times, properly can be different to different individuals because everybody is a little bit different in trying to understand how to load, how to explode, how to absorb all of that power that your kinetic chain is unleashing. And if you're not able to do it, you can ultimately hurt yourself. I tell my son this all the time. It's not the takeoff that hurts you. It's the landing that hurts you because you're coming down with such force.
That's exactly right. And that's where most of the injuries occur.
Yes.
And obviously, especially if you get hit a little bit and you jump one way and then you're in the air and you get touched, you get pushed a little bit.
Yeah, you got to be able to absorb all of that. And, you know, speaking of Marvin, because he's been dinged up a couple times this year, I'm sure if you ask Marvin, I didn't ask him this today when we were talking, but is this the most that you've ever been hurt in your career? I'm pretty sure he's going to say, yeah, I've never been hurt. I've been more bulldogish, but now you're going up against guys that are just as big, if not bigger, just as strong, if not stronger, and just as athletic.
And there's less recovery time between games.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've been through it so many times. It makes a big difference when you're experiencing it for the first time.
Right. I don't want to give away too much of the interview, but today talking to Marvin Bagley, I asked, and I say interview, it wasn't an interview, it was a conversation. I said, what surprised you? And his thing was about the travel. Like, he was like in preseason, I'm like, is this how it's going to be for 82 games? You know, because you're in college, you're in high school. You don't realize, maybe high school you play 30, 35 games, college 30, 35 games. You travel, you play twice a week. There's enough time to recover, but you're landing, you're taking off. And like you said, sometimes we'll be in New Jersey, and the next night we'll be playing in Boston, but we had traveled through Florida before we got there. Something crazy.
Well,
like
I was
that.
Going out for a walk with my wife on Saturday.
Okay.
So what is today? Monday?
Yes.
Okay, I have to ask what today is because I'm so tired I don't know. All right, so on Saturday, my wife and I are out for a walk. And I said to her, I go, you know what's crazy? I go, tomorrow night I'm sleeping in Dallas, but we have a game in both Sacramento and L.A. first.
Right.
Now think about that.
Think about
I'm in Sacramento going for a walk.
On Saturday.
Tomorrow night, Sunday night, I'm sleeping in Dallas. But before then, there are two games, one in Sacramento and one in L.A.
Go figure.
I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah, and you're just doing it from a commentator standpoint.
That's right, and I can't even imagine. The year that the Kings had a makeup game in New York was a 7-game road trip, and because of the game that was added on because of the snowstorm, it was an 8-game trip.
Okay.
And Jerry and I, the game was on Sunday in New York at Madison Square Garden, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, Jerry and I are getting ready to go on the air, and I go, Jerry, you know what's crazy? I go, we are standing on the floor at Madison Square Garden, and tomorrow night we are going to be sleeping in Orlando, but we have a game in New York and San Antonio first because we flew from New York 3 hours and 15 minutes to San Antonio, played against the Spurs the next night, after the game flew to Orlando.
Wow.
Here's where I think Marvin got a real good taste of this, because you and I have talked about this a lot. Because it was when you and I were looking at each other in awe of what we saw with De'Aaron Fox. The Kings were playing the Lakers in the preseason in L.A.
Right.
The next night, they were playing the Warriors in Seattle. Okay?
Yep.
We got to the hotel in Seattle after 3 in the morning.
Right.
Okay? And you don't do that in college.
No. Oh,
and then they played that night and got their doors blown out by the Warriors.
Yes. It's mind-blowing.
And then you fly right after the game to Sacramento.
And you're back home.
Right.
You're like, what just happened?
Right.
And also, you go to sleep sometimes and you wake up in the middle of the night. And
you have no idea where you are.
I'm like, Dallas.
No.
Okay.
You have no idea where you are.
The lights are out. What?
You don't know. You got to figure out, okay, now which direction is the bathroom?
Yes.
Which direction is the door? Which direction is, like, you really have to say, all right, first of all, where am I? There are times when I'll turn the TV on and like, I'll just watch the news for a minute. and then the weather will come on, and I'm watching the weather, and I'm like, now where am I on that map? Like, I'm like, I'm watching a weather forecast with a map of the United States. I'm like,
yeah.
Now where, wait a minute, where am I right now?
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy. You know what's cool about this Dallas hotel is all the lights are out. You get up to go to the bathroom. As soon as you move, there's a light.
There's
underneath.
A night light.
You see that?
I like that.
That is nice.
Yeah,
so
it's
I don't
nice.
Step on anything.
Yeah,
you know?
As I get older, I need those night lights. That's good stuff. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. And with the traveling, and every team does this, I mean, like when we were in New York, it's very loud there. There's two huge skyscrapers being built across the street. And you know what? They don't just stop constructing at 7 in the evening. They go on three shifts 24 hours a day. So at 4 in the morning, you hear the construction noise going on, that and the sirens. And that's and then sometimes, like the hotel in Portland is very noisy because the light rail is right underneath you.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember you said in New York, you was like, man, I couldn't sleep. Did you hear all that? I was like, no, I didn't hear it. I was dead, man. I was dead to the world. I didn't hear a thing.
Well, get your hearing checked. 339-1140, as I said. Don't forget, Ian Eagle is going to be coming on in 15 minutes. Be interested to get his take on Kentucky because, you know, it was interesting watching him play Wofford. I watched that game for a while, and Wofford really played them pretty well for a good portion of the game. Kentucky's clearly a team that could win it all. They have the lineup. Ian has just watched them play in the first two games, so we'll get his take on the Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, that Wofford team, Grant, if they could probably beat any team in this field because of the way that they shoot the basketball. When you shoot the basketball like that, and then you pair that with the fact that you got a guy, Fletcher McGee, who the all-time leading three-point shooter in the history of college basketball that goes 0 for 12 or whatever he did from the three-point line. It just doesn't happen that often.
I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm just being blatantly honest. I had never heard of Wofford before.
I didn't even
know anything about Wofford. I don't even know where they're at. I have never heard of – when I got my bracket and I'm looking at it, I'm like, who's Wofford? I've never heard of Wofford before.
I believe they're in the same division or league as Davidson, Steph Curry's
team. Right, but I had never heard of Wofford.
Yeah. You know,
I'm not trying to be funny or anything. I had never heard of Wofford.
I didn't know that they were the Terriers. I didn't know that.
Right. I had never even heard of them. I'm like, Wofford? I didn't even know how to pronounce their name. I had to wait. I'm like, okay, I'm going to listen to Ian do this game so I know how to pronounce the college's name. I didn't know if it was Wofford. I didn't know if it's Wofford. I honestly did not know that.
Wofford would be with two O's.
Woof, woof.
Absolutely.
Grant
Napier and Doug Christie, don't forget, we've got A's Baseball coming up for you at 6:30. Ian Eagle in about 15 minutes to talk about Kentucky. He's also got the three other teams, so he is in the Midwest region. We'll know on Sunday night who's going to the Final Four.
Man, that's big time stuff because it's for some young players. It is about as exciting as it's going to get. You know, ultimately, do you want to make it to the NBA? But listen, this is a stop along the way. A lot of these guys aren't going to make it. This is what they absolutely live for. They pour it all on the floor, and this is what March Madness is about.
Yep.
So this weekend's going to be Sweet 16. A lot of fun.
Look, a week from today, I'm going to be filling in for Jim Rome down in Southern California, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot of March Madness because we'll know who the Final Four is next Monday. So I'm looking forward to that. John Rothstein will be joining me. He is just an incredible basketball. His knowledge is incredible with college basketball. You see him on the CBS Sports Network and WFAN in New York and many other things. He'll be coming on with me next Monday to break this down and see who he likes in the Final Four. Personally, just from a basketball perspective, because I don't have a rooting interest at all in this tournament. I don't care about my bracket. I really don't care. I watch it for entertainment. I'm really rooting for North Carolina and Duke. I'd love to see that national championship game.
I know you said that. That is one. I mean, listen, it would be a lot of fun. It'd probably surpass, Indiana State and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.
Sure,
and Michigan State.
You know what? I shouldn't say sure it would, but I believe it would.
I got to get your take on this because we talk a lot about college basketball, not paying the players, you know, you get the scholarship, all that different stuff. But do you know they have a Zion cam? Did you know that?
I did see that.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The kid, where the problem is the NCAA gets paid by media, just like the teams, professional teams get paid by media. They sign contracts.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
the professional teams give the money to the players. The NCAA does not do that.
All right. So I was in Kansas during the All-Star break.
Okay.
And I was speaking with one of the administrators at Kansas mm-hmm. at dinner.
Okay.
And we were talking about the routine for the players the day of the game. And he said, well, first of all, they all are in a special dormitory that has their own practice court in it, and they have their own chefs. And wait a minute. And he was saying that they actually got up and did a walkthrough at like 8 in the morning and then had a team meal. Then they were able to go back to sleep and then because the game was at 3 o'clock. And he said to me, he said, you know, there's this notion that the players don't get any money. He said they get a NCAA Division I approved stipend of, and I want to say it was $700 a month.
That's different than when I was in
school. I understand it's different when I was in school, too. And I was like, wow. I go, that's a lot of money for a college kid. Now, I'm not saying it's what a percentage would be of what the gross is for the NCAA, but we talk about Duke. You and I were at Duke last year.
Yeah.
The cost of an education at Duke for 4 years can run you $250,000.
Yes.
And the reality is that very few of the players that play at Duke are going on to the NBA.
Right.
The others are there, and they're also graduating with their education.
Yes.
And in addition, I'm not saying it's easy because it's not, but they're getting a first-class education, and on top of that, they're getting things that no one else that goes to Duke gets.
Right. Now that's one aspect, and that's one that. But I'm saying the kid's name is on the cam, and they sold cam to advertisers.
And I'm
all okay. This.
I think that's despicable.
Okay, we're on the same page.
I think
the
that's
other
wrong.
One is
like to me, Zion Williamson should be able to make money on that. That is his marketability. That's his name, and I think that's wrong.
Okay.
I think in that particular instance, that's wrong. Even if you want to put it into a trust.
Yes.
For when he's done playing college, that's fine. If you don't want him to have the money while he's playing, that's fine. But you need to put it on the side and go, hey, whenever you're done when you're done being an amateur, that money is then yours.
Yeah. And if whatever that number is, if the school gets some of that because the school is the stage that he is able to play upon, but he's got to. I mean, goodness gracious. Now, that doesn't happen for everybody. I get that. And that's why I'm saying a situation like that, they should take care of the kid. That's all.
All right, 339-1140. Let's get to some more phone calls and Jose. Hello, Jose. Jose, what's up?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Who do you think plays like you used to play now in the league? Who do you think resembles your style more? And I'll have that question for you too, Grant.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yep. That's a tough one. I was talking to the G-man before the game the other night, and I'm not using this guy as exactly, but 3-and-D is kind of the new thing. That's mm-hmm. the term. So a lot of the guys that I would describe to play like me are probably some of those guys that have the ability. I could probably handle the ball better than a lot of them in pass and different things like that. But Harrison Barnes for our team is an interesting one because he – comes in, he plays defense, and you put him against the best guy on the other team, whether it's sometimes a point guard, but the 2-3 definitely stretches the floor, knocks down the three ball. You can throw him the post and isolate him from time to time. If you need scoring, he'll give you scoring. If you need defense, he'll give you defense. So there's a bunch, but most of them are the 3-and-D. That's how to answer that.
A guy that I saw recently that reminded me of you, although you're more talented offensively than he was Patrick Beverley.
Oh, Pat. Yeah. I see Pat. He's a lockdown defender.
Right. And, and he's got that edge to him.
Yeah.
And you know what you're getting every single game. And you know how I feel about you. The thing I have always respected the most about you was your consistency. And you weren't going to make shots every night, nor was Pazier or Chris. But I knew every single game that the guy that you were guarding would know that he had a man on it. Like, you didn't take – it's like a – I've always used you as an analogy. is as a baseball player, you might go through a slump at the plate,
right,
but you were still a gold glove fielder. Didn't matter. You were always taking your glove to the field, and you were going to change the game with your glove if you couldn't change it with your bat.
And that's why, as we had a caller about development of talent for the Kings and all, that's why I think it's so important. And I think that our team, meaning our old SAC team, was probably at the head of players having the ability, Grant, to dribble, pass, shoot. Now, everyone didn't do it at the same level. Everyone didn't shoot like Peja, but everybody could shoot. Everybody didn't rebound like Chris, but everybody could rebound. And when you're able to do that, it puts you in a different zone. That's why, for me, you're right. Maybe tonight I'm not making shots, but I'm going to rebound the ball. I'm going to assist the ball. I'm going to play defense. I'm going to do different things. And if you're able to do that, you give yourself a chance, is what I always tell the kids I train. It's like, if you only do one thing really good and that's it, it's easy for the coach to take you off the floor. If you do everything, at least he can depend on you for a lot of different stuff.
All right. Don't forget Iron Eagle coming up in just a couple of minutes right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. We're about an hour away from getting you to A's baseball. The season begins Thursday for all the teams except for Oakland and Seattle because they began their season in Tokyo a couple of days ago. And then we'll be doing baseball. And we'll be talking a lot of baseball with, again, opening day on Thursday. And you talk about now it's coming every night. With this spring is always crazy because it coincides with the hockey playoffs, the NBA playoffs. You have the start of baseball, and you and I think most people, you know, the Masters is just, I love watching the Masters. I just absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. When you talk about the field this year, and you look at Rory, and you look at all these different players, some haven't won. Rory's looking for the Grand Slam. Is Phil at 50 going to be able to, you know, play at a high level? We watched Vijay Singh this year compete, and you of course put Tiger in there. So many different storylines for an incredible tournament. Man, that is going to be a fun weekend.
Yeah, and Rory, really, I think winning the Players' Championship last weekend, that's huge for him, boy. That is absolutely huge for him. You talk about confidence going into the Masters.
Yeah, I think that above all, that sport is really, really confidence-based. I was watching Dustin Johnson earlier, and he was talking about not making putts inside of 8 feet. Just on a weekend, it wasn't happening for me. You're thinking, but then you'll see him next week, and he'll just be draining them. It's one that happens, you know, change of grip pressure, all the different things that go along with it.
I don't see how Dustin Johnson could have any confidence right now. He shot a 74 yesterday in the final round at the Valspar. He's not clicking on all cylinders heading into the Masters.
Yeah, and that, think about that, Grant. 2 years ago, fell down on the stairs at the Masters, ready to maybe put it away, and now look at him.
Iron Eagle coming up next right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. A couple days off before they resume the NCAA tournament with the Sweet 16. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just wing it. And, you know, Iron Eagle, you know, he gets a chance to announce some incredible games. But, Doug, I got to tell you something. I may have missed the best game of the year when, because of the NCAA tournament, he was not in Sacramento last week for that miraculous comeback by the Brooklyn Nets. How are you, sir?
Yes, rub it in. Salt in the wound. I did pay attention to what took place there. That was really phenomenal. I know not from your perspective, but from a NBA fan perspective, that was absolutely one of the best games of the season. You're 100% right.
You know this, Ian. If you do this long enough, you see it all. I did a game when Tyreek Evans was a rookie in Chicago, and the Kings were down 35 points in the middle of the third quarter, and they won the game. And I'm going to throw a wrench at you here. I mean, you've been blessed to announce so many different sports. Is there one comeback that, whether it's the NFL or college, whatever the case may be, that sticks out more than anything else that you've had the pleasure of being behind the mic for?
Yeah, I've had a few that I can remember. The one that does stand out is a Nets playoff game down 23 points to the Celtics, came from behind and won the game. That one was on the road, and it just had a little something extra attached to it just based on the histrionics there. Yeah, I think you find these in your career where you just don't give up on a game. And I know there are gut feelings sometimes where you say, all right, this is over. There's just mm-hmm. nothing that's going to change this. But I do think in the NBA, because there's so much talent, if you let your foot off the gas pedal just a little bit, teams can get hot. Players specifically can get hot, like D'Angelo Russell. And just watching even the Tennessee-Iowa game the other day, I'm not sure
that you saw
it on the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
It was 25 in the first half. I thought, all right, this is done. I came back, and it was 11. Then it was 9. Then it was 7. Then it was 5. And teams can just lose their way when it comes to college basketball as well. So, yeah, you always have to be prepared as an announcer. As you guys know, Grant, you've been doing this so long. Expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
You know, the anatomy of those comebacks is the thing that really just blows me away. And you watched a game, Kentucky and Wofford, where if Fletcher McGee gets hot, probably that changes the entire outcome of it. When you're a higher seed and you got that game under control, you're thinking, okay, I got this. But it can take one guy, similar to a game like that, he didn't hit any shots, that can kind of bring a team back and put pressure on you.
Doug, you lived this. So I defer to you, but the humbling part of this game still amazes me. The fact that on a Thursday night, Fletcher McGee can capture the attention of the basketball world because he sets the record for career three-pointers made in Division I. And 2 days later, he can't make a shot. He goes 0 of 12 in the category that propelled him to prominence. It's just so bizarre how wide the parameters are in this game. If he just shoots 20% from three-point territory, well below par for him, well below the level that he's accustomed to, they probably win the game, and they're the mid-major mania of the weekend going into the Sweet 16, and everybody would be talking about Wofford. They'd be getting all this publicity for a job that was so well done by Mike Young, their head coach. I just remind myself of these things. And as you said, anatomy of a comeback. Sometimes a ball just knocked out of bounds, a deflection, a missed layup, things that happen over the course of a game when you're down 25 or up 25 that could change the course of the game still amaze me to this day.
You know, to give Fletcher, you guys did a fantastic job covering the game, but you showed him warming up, actually. And I have to defer to Kentucky and give them a lot of credit because I thought a lot of those shots were contested. But the part that I'm talking about is he warms up shooting bad shots. Did you get a good look at that?
Yeah, we did. And we talked to his head coach about it. And we talked to people around the program because Jim Spanarkel, who played in the NBA, was an All-American for Duke, was a terrific shooter in his day. It was counterintuitive to him. He was watching this guy shoot, and he's turning to me and saying, I can't believe he contorts his body this way. He catches passes in bad position and then somehow springs up, and that's considered a good shot, according to the coach, because they go in. It's a good shot if it goes in. When things go awry, like it did on Saturday afternoon against Kentucky, boy, did it ever just escape him. We showed him warming up, and the reason why we did, because, look, all players warm up, all players look to get extra shots. They were told that we're not having a shoot-around day of the game. The game was a little bit earlier than the previous night. They wanted him to get rest. They wanted him to sleep in. And he insisted that he go, and he ended up going with one teammate. Everybody else did not shoot around at 8 a.m. that morning, and we had video because the cameras were on. So we just happened to show the footage of him shooting around at 8 a.m. in an empty gym, and it just shows his mentality. But, look, I have no idea if that's cause and effect. The instincts of the coaches were they need time off. They need to just get ready mentally. And his instinct was, I got to go get shots up.
Interesting. Ian Eagle joining us right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. And again, once the beauty to me of this tournament is here we are down to the final 16 teams, and there's no dominant team. You know, we saw Duke have to hang on for dear life yesterday. We talked about what you went through with Kentucky, and I watched that Tennessee and the way they were able to prevail in overtime. And we talk about, you know, Virginia in that first round. I that's the beauty of this tournament, isn't it? And I would think from you and your perspective, man, expect the unexpected every time the ball's thrown up at these games.
Yeah, and there is that next tier when you get into the second weekend of teams that are hardened and teams that are supremely talented that usually prevail, because a little bit of the pressure and stress level is off. You've gotten through the opening weekend. I think Virginia, as an example, I just love their team. I love the way they play. I loved them last year. I had them on CBS, and I thought, you know what? It's time for Tony Bennett's team to go on a run. DeAndre Hunter goes down with an injury last year, and they just couldn't overcome it. They happened to play a UMBC team that shot the lights out, played a perfect second half, and they're the first number one seed to go down. Come back this year, and everybody's got a bullseye on their back. There were shaky moments in that first half. I watched a lot of the Virginia first-round game, and there were times where I thought to myself, could this possibly happen again? I just knew that once they got through that stretch, that they'd be okay. And then I knew they would be okay in the second round. It got a little tighter at the end, but yeah, Virginia's a quality team. And what they've done during the regular season has translated to the postseason. And now I think they can be a little bit more of themselves out there. And the fact that they're not thinking about what everybody had been talking about. This week, you really do find out who are the premier teams, and I'm in Kansas City coming up this week.
Yep.
I can tell you right now, I would not be able to pick the region. I think Auburn is really good. They play extremely hard. I know how good North Carolina is. That's going to be a breakneck pace. The Houston-Kentucky game, I've watched Houston now a few times on television. I'm excited to see them up close. They're guard-oriented, but they are very tough, and they play excellent perimeter defense. And Kentucky, if P.J. Washington doesn't play, it balances the scales. Those are two, in my mind, pick'em games, even though the seedings would tell you differently.
You know, I'm curious. I think a lot of people would be interested to know, particularly in the first round that you did that just concluded with the first and second round. You do college basketball for CBS during the year, but you're doing the marquee games, and then you get you see where you're going, and you have a team like Wofford, for example, and you have some other teams that you probably don't know much about. Can you talk to the fans about the preparation and getting ready to go on the air on that first day when you're doing multiple games and you're looking at teams really for the first time?
Grant, I know this wasn't you at Bowling Green, but
here it comes.
It would be as if you didn't attend class all year and then you show up for the final. That's the general feeling that you have.
All right, well, now I know exactly what it was like, so thank you for filling me in on that.
Yeah, Pepperdine, you couldn't do that stuff. I get it, but
not unless they were having the final down at the beach, you couldn't.
Yeah. So really, that gives you a little taste of it.
Yeah.
When you get the assignment, it's usually around 8:30, 9 o'clock on Sunday, the selection Sunday, and you find out what your assignment is and what eight teams you're going to be covering. There's that moment of panic because you know that there are going to be teams that you've never seen. And there's a chance, and I'm saying this as honestly and as openly as possible, there's a chance they're going to tell you a team and you won't know their nickname. That happens every single year when they told me this year that I have Abilene Christian, first time they're in the NCAA tournament. I know where it is, but I did not know their nickname. They're the Wildcats. It made it easy. They were playing Kentucky. And I remember this very vividly. My first year I got assigned the NCAA tournament, 1998. Where did I get assigned? I got assigned Sacramento. And I fly cross country. I had to take a connecting flight. And this is pre-internet where everything was available to you. So I've got hard copies of everything. I've got eight teams assigned to me. And the first team that I started to look at was Maryland. And the first name that I looked at was Sharunas Yesakabichus.
That's impressive right there.
I said, I'm screwed. Like, I'm not, there's no possible way I'm going to learn all these players, all these names, if I can't even get the one guy in my head. Because I really was wondering. And I had to break it down, and Grant, you can relate to this because of where you grew up. I literally had to break it down as if Marv Albert was calling the game. I thought to myself, all right, just remember Marv Albert. Marv, yes! Yes. That's the only way I could remember. I was so freaked out by how many obviously years go by. You figure it out. Come up with a concept of how to do this. But from a broadcasting standpoint, it is daunting.
Hey, I got to tell you, I started off the show today by telling Doug, and I have no problem admitting this, I had never even heard of Wofford before, and I had to turn the game on to hear you because I didn't know how to pronounce the school's name. I didn't know if it was Wofford. I didn't know how to pronounce the name. Yeah. I had never heard of it before. So, yes, I understand what you mean.
And trust me, when I had them in the tournament 6 years ago, I believe it was, and when I got assigned Wofford, I didn't know where they were. I did not know how to pronounce the name. I certainly didn't know their nickname. I didn't know what conference they were in. And you do the research. You immerse yourself in it. So when I got them this year, the first thing that I remembered was that I pounded it into my head, the pronunciation. W-A-H-F-E-R-D. Wofford. Wofford. I said it 25 times the day I got the assignment 6 years ago. And now here they pop up on my schedule again.
Amazing.
How much do you think benefits a team if they face each other? You know, you got Duke, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is one of the – gave Duke one of the losses, albeit you did not have Zion. I see Gonzaga, who's played a lot of these – they played Tennessee. They played some of these teams multiple times. Do you think it's of benefit to a team to have done that?
Yeah, I think it's of benefit to the team that would be considered the underdog, that the intimidation factor is not there. If you're playing Big Bad Duke and you don't know what to expect when you walk on the court, that can be right out of the gate an X point swing because you're just not ready, or mentally you've checked out because you've had this anticipation in your brain. And then once the physical part kicks in, look, UCF should have won the game. It's that simple. They were not intimidated by Duke. They have this massive human being in Taco Fall in the middle. And I think because of Johnny Dawkins and his experience with Duke, having played there, having coached there, the whole nine yards, I think he had the ability to connect with his team and explain to them, they're just like you. We're going to be fine. We can win this. Now, obviously, they come up short. It's going to eat away at them for the rest of their lives. I'm not saying that to be dramatic, but it will. That's a game that should have been theirs. It should have been done. It should have been over.
Yep.
Duke found a way to win. If you're Virginia Tech, not saying they're going to win the game, but they're not going to walk in intimidated. They've already beat this team. I know it wasn't without Zion, but they're walking into the gym feeling like they have a legitimate puncher's chance to win this game against the number one overall seed.
We appreciate you using your study break to come on with us. Now you can get back to work.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I've got a second final coming up.
Yeah.
Week. That's the way I view it.
No, you're awesome, man. Safe travels. You're the best. We'll talk to you soon. Be well.
Thank you,
sir. Yeah, I miss seeing you guys out in Sacramento, too. We'll see you next time.
Look forward to it. That's Ian Eagle. Great job with CBS. We'll be right back on Sports 1140 KHDK. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We get to some phone calls with John. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Grant, I got a question for you. I'm not sure if you consider this a personal question, but I'm wondering how come you haven't done some national games for the NBA.
I actually have done a few national games on ESPN Radio, but quite honestly, I haven't been asked to do them on TV, so that's why I haven't done them.
Okay, you would if you were asked?
Yeah, of course. Yep, I sure would. Absolutely.
Cool. I know you guys have won Emmys. You and Jerry have won Emmys in the past. I don't know about you and Doug yet, but...
Doug will win some. I can 100% Doug? Guarantee it.
Thank you, sir. I hope so.
Guarantee it.
Would you do the same thing?
Yes, yeah, similar to Grant. I've never been asked. If I was asked like Grant, I probably would do it, but I haven't been.
Okay, cool. I was just curious. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Grant Napier and Doug Christie. We get to another John. John, welcome to the program.
Doug, Grant, how are you guys?
What's up, John?
Man, you guys have never been asked. I'm so glad because I don't want you guys to go anywhere. You got that?
Oh, appreciate you, buddy.
Well, come on. It's from the heart, man. That's directly from the ticker.
Well, I think what that caller was referring to, we wouldn't have to move. He was just talking about maybe doing some postseason games or something like that. But it's no big deal. I have one of 30 jobs in the world, so I'm grateful that I have what I have.
Hey, I wholeheartedly agree. I wholeheartedly agree. And I heard last week there was a similar call in which you said nearly the same thing. Man, what a load of topics today, though. Zion Williamson and the foul or no foul, two fouls, you know, and they were both maybe tic-tac fouls, but hey, they were offenses. They were, in fact, fouls.
Yeah, listen, I think it would be, if you're Central Florida, it's extra tough to take. I don't think there's any question about that, but they're not playing and Duke is, and that's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line, and that is exactly what it says. And same with both of the Kings games. I mean, last night, I don't know really what we saw. And exactly kind of the same thing Saturday night. Not exactly what we saw. We saw almost the same game out of the same team.
That's very true. Slow start, and thanks, John, for the call.
Do you agree
yeah.
with that?
Yeah. No, and thank you. We got to go. Thank you. It's always good hearing from you, buddy. Be well. Yeah, they got off to a terrible start against Phoenix on Saturday night. They got off to a terrible start last night. They only scored 20 points in the first quarter. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and luckily, Grant, for the Kings, many times they're playing against teams that it's getting late early.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And what that means is, look, you won't win it in the first quarter,
That's
but you can
point.
Lose it. And the Kings put themselves in bad positions.
That's a good point.
I thought they felt the other last night just. What was it, 21-20 or something like that? Underneath, yep. Just the flow wasn't right. Then they come out in the second quarter and they find their way. But you can't do that at this league to be at the level the Kings want to be at consistently.
All right, let's get to Dustin. Dustin, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I had a quick question here. Just as the season's kind of wrapping up, looking to ring in right around 40 wins, how can Kings fans expect to feel? I mean, so close to playoffs, but so much higher than we were projected to be. What do you guys just take to the season wraps up?
I think the playoffs would have been great, but in the big picture, it's unrealistic to think that the Kings were going to be in the playoffs this year. They could have been if everything had gone right, if Marvin Bagley maybe had not been injured. But I'm so encouraged because the nucleus is finally here. The foundation has been built. It's there. And now you add on to the foundation. I can't predict injuries, but what I do believe in my heart, the Kings have a couple of all-stars currently on their roster. And this team is going to be so much fun to watch. It's the most excited I've been in a long, long time because this is not fake. It's not like, oh, gee, I think. No, I know. This is something special that's brewing here in Sacramento. I really believe that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And I'm not manufacturing. I don't need to. I've been doing this long enough, and I think people know where I come from. You know, if I think the team's bad, I'm going to tell you I think they're bad. One thing I'm proud to say, and I don't have any problem saying so, and I know my partner feels the same way. We thought this team was going to be much better than most people back in October, and we've been very consistent with that. Now, I would also say I didn't think they would be this good, and now that I've seen this, I can't wait for October to get here because I think there are great things ahead.
This is the upside of where I thought the Kings would be. That's why I said they need to start trending towards 40. Mm-hmm. Well, they're here, and this is what that looks like. Now, taking that next step, it would have been – I can't even put into words making the playoffs for the Kings because they would get the type of knowledge individually and collectively that would take them to the stratosphere. So now they have to come back and they have to fight through it again. So what they're doing is they're earning every single thing that they get, and they will be better for it.
All right, if you want to get in, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Don't forget that we have A's baseball coming up for you at 6:30 tomorrow. Doug and I will be in Dallas for, well, we're in Dallas now, but we'll be in the arena for the Kings and the Dallas Mavericks. That means another Luka Doncic, Marvin Bagley game.
Man.
And maybe the last time you and I ever see Dirk Nowitzki play a live game.
That is true, actually. Yeah, you are correct. So many, as you bring him up, Grant, so many good and bad memories. Bad memories from the standpoint that, I mean, he was a nightmare to guard, a pleasure to watch, do his job, master his skill going against them. I'm sure a lot of Kings fans, a lot of good memories, because normally we beat the Dallas Mavericks. But an incredible career, a Hall of Famer, a guy that did it the right way, and just a true, true professional.
Big time. I will, whenever it is, whether it's this year or next year, he's a guy I'll miss just seeing, because he embodies all the great things with this sport that we've been blessed to, in your sake, play and me announce. It's been amazing. All right. We have 30 minutes left right here at Sports 1140 KHDK.